president's nominee to lead the IRS faces some headwinds. From Marketplace in New York, I'm Sabri Benishore, in for David Brancaccio. Today, the Senate Finance Committee is set to vote on President Trump's pick to head the Internal Revenue Service, California tax lawyer Charles Rettig. If he's later confirmed by the full Senate, he'll lead the implementation of the new tax law and a new IRS policy getting blowback this week. It's a change in the way some charities report their donors. Marketplace's Kimberly Adams is in Washington and has been following this story. Kimberly?
Right, Sabri. This change would make it so that certain types of nonprofits would no longer have to disclose their big donors. This is particularly relevant for nonprofits that use their money to influence elections. Labor unions, groups like the National Rifle Association, or more directly political groups. Under the old rule, these groups had to tell the IRS who their big donors were, but it wasn't supposed to be public information, although sometimes the names did get out. Under the new rules, groups don't have to put their big donors on their tax forms, but they do have to keep it on hand in case the IRS asks for it. The argument here is that the IRS didn't need this information to begin with, and it's a lot of extra paperwork. But opponents say this will provide even more opportunities for so-called dark money in politics. That's a term used to describe effectively untraceable money being used to sway elections. 501c3 charities like the Red Cross, however, will still have to disclose their big donors.
All right, thanks, Kimberly. And let's take a look at the numbers. The FTSE in London is up 0.1%. Dow, S&P, and NASDAQ futures are down in the 2 to 4/10% range, with the Dow future down 60 points. The 10-year Treasury yield is at 2.89%. Tesla CEO Elon Musk apologized yesterday, not only to the cave diver involved in the recent rescue in Thailand, whom Musk insulted, but also to his employees. After months of erratic behavior swinging Tesla's stock price, investors are worried about the visionary founder's temperament, as Marketplace's Aaron Schrank reports.
There was the earnings call in May when Musk mocked analysts, statements going after short sellers and journalists, and his tweet suggesting one of the cave rescuers is a pedophile. That crossed a line, says Gene Munster at venture capital firm Loop Ventures.
It just was showing a side that we didn't feel was particularly confidence-building for investors.
Munster doesn't own any Tesla stock, but he wrote an open letter to Musk on behalf of investors asking the CEO to apologize. Analyst Ed Kim at Auto Pacific says Musk is synonymous with Tesla, so anything he says reflects on the brand.
Tesla stock has taken something of a hit. Is it something that I think Tesla can recover from? Definitely, but Musk needs to more or less keep his mouth shut.
Kim says the concern here is that Musk is cracking under pressure.
The launch of the Model 3 is arguably the single most important event in the company's history.
That's the affordable model Musk hopes can turn Tesla from a niche automaker to a mainstream brand. Up until last month, the company was failing to meet its production goals. I'm Aaron Schrank for Marketplace.
The decade between 1997 and 2007 was a pretty dark time for U.S. manufacturing. Manufacturing employment fell 22%. Lots of reasons for that: automation, increased productivity. But one big cause was competition from Chinese imports. There were benefits to consumers, for sure, who had access to cheaper products. But the downsides were concentrated in U.S. manufacturing jobs. This is all according to research a few years back from David Autor, a professor of economics at MIT, and two colleagues. We wanted to check in with him now that trade, and specifically trade with China, is at the center of escalating conflicts between the U.S. and many other countries. Good morning, David.
Good morning.
So is Donald Trump's trade policy now a delayed reaction to the disruptive integration of China into the world economy?
I think the anger about trade is certainly in part spurred by that experience. The sort of concentrated economic pain felt throughout the South Atlantic, through parts of the Midwest, even parts of the Northeast, contributed to sentiments that Washington was insufficiently attentive to the very real economic pain that people were experiencing. And that gave rise to a certain degree of kind of economic nationalism. We need to, close our doors to trade. So yeah, we see even in looking at the electoral data, it does look like the trade shock probably gave a couple of points edge to Donald Trump. And given how close the election was, that, was arguably decisive.
So it used to be that, there was a neat and tidy economic argument that free trade was overall beneficial. Sure, there are winners and there are losers, but, there's overall more winning. Has the U.S. experience with China unfairly tarnished that view? Basically, did free trade get a bad rap? Or is there something substantively different now about how trade and whether trade benefits countries?
I think the answer is more complicated. Economists have always understood that free trade grows the size of the economic pie at the country level, but it can and typically will contract some slices in absolute terms. In other words, it raises GDP, but it makes some workers worse off. And without redistribution or some method for compensation, trade will create winners and losers. China's integration into the world economy kind of really reminded us how important that redistributive aspect is.
What do we do? We want the benefits of free trade, market access, more sales. We don't want major disruptions. What's the right way forward?
I think there's an argument for gradualism, letting the adjustments take place over time rather than all at once. We should recognize that although there are aggregate gains, they're going to come at the cost of some individuals, and we should be prepared to compensate them. We should have a more active trade adjustment policy. We should have better long-term unemployment insurance for workers who are displaced by such shocks, or training programs, or even so-called wage insurance that effectively compensates them over some longer period of time if they have to take a new job at a lower wage.
David Autor, professor of economics at MIT, thanks so much for speaking with us.
Nice speaking with you.
I'm Sabri Benishore with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.